This is The Scoop, a weekly regional roundup of stories from remote radio stations in British Columbia. Each week, The Scoop features news created by fellow LJI journalists in the communities of Smithers, Prince George, Nanaimo, Burnaby, and the Comox Valley. LJI is the local journalism initiative, and it's how your best local news is funded on these participating stations. Now, let's see what's happening this week in BC.
Today on The Scoop, artist and educator Justine A. Chambers wins the 2025 Viva Award. Danny Nesvarandi at CJSF in Burnaby has that story. The College of New Caledonia held its North Works Career Fair this past week, and it saw one of the healthiest attendance in many years. Most of the trade-related recruiters were there as well. Ian Gregg at CIFA Radio in Prince George dives in. And following the story of a long-lost record being found, former Nanaimo-based band The Glass Cage was reunited for the first time in 50 years. Lauren McKenzie at CHLY Nanaimo took it all in. And in Northwest BC, Geoscience Gitsagukla connects Indigenous knowledge with the mineral industry. Pam Hassan at CICK News in Smithers takes us through Rock Talks. I'm Daniel Messick, and you're listening to The Scoop.
Reporting from Vancouver, BC, this is Danny Nesvarandi, your community journalist for CJSF 90.1 FM. Justine A. Chambers is an artist, educator, and professor of dance with Simon Fraser University's School of Contemporary Arts. According to Chambers' bio, her practice is a collaboration with her Black matrilineal heritage and extends from this continuum and its entanglements with Western contemporary dance and visual arts practices. Recently, Chambers was announced as the winner of the 2025 Viva Award. Established in 1988 by Jack and Doris Shadbolt, the Viva Award is an annual prize awarded to mid-career visual artists in BC who demonstrate exceptional creative ability and commitment to the visual arts. CJSF sat down for a conversation with Chambers to discuss her reaction to receiving the award, her work up until this point, and what's next for her practice and career. To start off the interview, I guess I should just say that I'm here with artist, choreographer, dancer, educator, Justine Chambers, and we're here to talk today about an award that you recently won, the 2025 Viva Award. And the first question that I had for you was just, what was that moment like, I guess, just finding out that you received it in the first place?
I was kind of in shock. It's like my brain wouldn't hear it. Melanie O'Brien called and she said, Justine, you know, I have good news. You're this person. And I went, what? And then she said it again and I went, what? And then my kid came running in from her room and said, Mom, did someone die? And I said, no, it's fine. I won an award. So I was just, I was really shocked. It's not something that was even on my radar as something that I would be, that is available to me. So I was really surprised and delighted, of course. I mean, I think for me, this award, what makes it extra special is that it's a jury of your peers. And that made me feel like a million bucks. Like, it just really, the people on the jury are so such extraordinary humans. And I thought, oh my goodness. And it also made me go, okay, like, no, game on, girl. Now, like, step it up. I think that's always my first response to these things is, like, live up to, you know, if you're just, I feel like when someone, when you're given attention, it's a call to meet that attention and consider what else you could be doing, which, and not in like a strange, not worthy way, because I do feel like I've worked very hard and it's just lovely to be recognized, of course, but I also think, now you keep going, you know? So motivating, shocking, delightful. And yeah, it's very cool. I can't even be cool about it.
Yeah. I mean, that's fair. I like what you said about, you know, it's not that you're surprised in a way of like not feeling worthy of it, but more so that like now you feel like you have to sort of rise to that occasion of
absolutely
of the award. Yeah.
Yeah. Which I love, you know, it's always great to like keep going, like bring the A+ game, you know, or whatever it is, you know, that's I think that's, you know, what we have to do to stay interesting and interested. It's always more interesting to be interested than to be interesting. You know what I mean? But I think like that's it makes me want to grow a little bit, maybe harder than I was planning to or something. Yeah.
One thing I was really interested by was like the wording of the award. When I was looking into it, it said that like the Viva Award was established and it's labeled as being a prize awarded to mid-career visual artists in BC. Is that a label that you would agree with or subscribe to? Like, do you see, especially in the context of a career that involves creative expression, do you see your career as having like a fixed start and end?
Oof, that is such, I mean, there's many debates about these things. And I think, you know, if we, you know, I am definitely mid-century at this moment of my life. So in that way, I'm like, you know, assuming that I'll live to 100, then yes, it's mid-career. But then also, I don't know. It's hard to think about being in the middle of anything, right? You know, like you said, there's this like kind of this sort of protracted continuum that we all feel like we're on. And it may be, you know, I think that that's a really tough question, because like, what is, when are we mid-career, right? And you know, in some places it would be like, oh, if you're no longer emerging, you're mid-career. But yeah, I mean, I just hope that, yeah, I would love for this to be mid-career. I'll put it that way, because I think like, ooh, really, am I going to keep working all the way until I'm 100? But maybe I will, like, who knows, right? Maybe in the realm of visual arts, I'm more mid-career than I am in dance. Maybe that's a better way of putting it if I think about it that way. You know, like I started dancing professionally when I was 18. So I think that, but my sort of, my relationship with visual arts, I think, showed up like in the 2009, 2010. So maybe in that way it is. I mean, it's just even wild to say career at this point in my life. I don't think that I even, when I started to dance, when I decided that I was going to be a dancer, I don't think I could even see, you know, further than 2 years ahead, you know. But then now I can look back over 30 years and go, okay, maybe I did have a career, you know, like I did make it a career somehow. Like, how do we do these things? Because, you know, this never has always, it's, you know, there's so many talented artists everywhere, all over the world, right? And it's not, we don't always have like the right timing or the right opportunities or the right means to keep going. And I guess it makes me maybe in that sort of, now it makes me feel like I'm way past mid-career when I can look back and be like, wow, I had the support to do it. But yeah, mid-career. I also paused when I read that, I will say.
Yeah, because who gets to define that, right? That was something I was very curious about.
Yeah. I mean, you know, it's funny because I think about like how granting bodies kind of define that. You know, it's like, are you emerging? Are you mid-career? Are you senior? Sorry about that noise. It's my SFU email. I don't know how to turn off that notification. Maybe that shows me as like a really mid-career. So I think that, yeah, maybe those things are defined by our support systems or the structures that allow us to keep going. But for myself, sometimes I feel like I'm just figuring things out now.
This has been Danny Nesvedarani, your community journalist for CJSF 90.1 FM.
This is Ian Gregg reporting for CIFA Radio's Due North on 88.7 FM. This initiative is made possible by the Community Radio Fund of Canada through the Local Journalism Initiatives Program. Find our news stories online at frequencynews.ca or cfur.ca. The College of New Caledonia, or CNC, hosted the Northworks Career Fair on February 11th, 2026 in Prince George, Clayliton A, inviting employers and students of all kinds. Employers in attendance were various nonprofits, service industry representatives, branches of government, municipal government, heavy industry, mining, technology, and more. Students with a wide array of skill sets were also there, devices in hand, taking down emails and numbers. To get an idea of what kind of graduate employers were looking for, we spoke to a number of different employers stationed around the gathering place, or atrium, at the college. NDIT, a familiar nonprofit dedicated to stimulating economic growth and job creation in central northern BC, was in attendance, Here they are to describe the talent they were looking for.
My name is Wendy Okoye, and I am with Northern Development Initiative Trust. We're based out here in Prince George. And the reason why we're here today is that we're trying to promote our internship program. So our organization provides funding for 12, up to 12 host communities to host a recent graduate or a student who have recently graduated within the last 12 months to go work for a local or First Nations government in Northern BC to be able to get hands-on work experience, mentorship opportunities, networking opportunities, as well as professional development. And this would be able to help them progress in the future in their professional roles. So that's what.
Is there a particular field or certification or a college program that you're hoping to draw from?
Yes, we're hoping to draw students that are in the office administration program, especially, or students who are interested in economic development, or who are students who are interested in working for a local or First Nations government. So if you're interested in any of this, I think you should look into the NDIT local and First Nations government internship program.
While interesting opportunities for business administration were represented, our Northern BC region isn't necessarily known for having a strong tech center, but at least one company, IREN, or I-R-E-N, was present.
I'm Salima, and I'm a recruiter over at IREN.
What does IREN do? What's IREN's story?
Yeah, so we build AI infrastructure. So we build, own, and operate data centers. We have three in British Columbia, one in Prince George, one in Mackenzie, one in Canal Flats. We also have two larger locations in Texas, and we've got offices around the world in Sydney, Vancouver, San Francisco, New York, as well as around Texas.
What fields of employment are you aiming to fill, or perhaps what skills or certification are you looking to find here at the career fair?
That's a great question. So we have over 150 roles that we're actively recruiting for. In Prince George and Mackenzie, the number one skill set, or role rather, that we're hoping to hire for is for a data center technician. That data center technician role is somewhat of a technical role, and it lends really well to people who are in programs where they do obtain CompTIA or CCNA certifications.
ITAM, or the acronym ITAM, stands for IT Asset Management, the practice of tracking, managing, and optimizing IT hardware and software throughout their life cycles from procurement to disposal. In a sense, a combination of information technology skills with both software and hardware, and the practice of logistics, keeping all these things running indefinitely.
Beyond that, we do have many other supporting roles, so we are open to tradespeople. We've got some electrician positions. We also have a lot of on-site roles, so anything from general laborer to, HVAC support, all kinds of things. I, as a recruiter for this team, am constantly posting new positions, I would say at least two a week. So, to give you a snapshot, that's kind of what we're looking for today.
Gotcha. You mentioned electrical positions. I imagine the electrical program here at the college is well aligned with that. Are there any other programs here at the college you're aware of that line up well with what you're looking for?
Absolutely. I would say the electrical program, I believe it's called the ITAM program. Some of the trades roles, I've met some students today who are doing some of the trades sampler programs that seem very, very interesting. And I know they're early in their career, but super curious in terms of how that pans out. We will be hiring indefinitely, so it is something that we're excited to do.
This is Ian Gregg reporting for CIFA Radio's Due North on 88.7 FM.
This is a CITRA News Update. Following the story of a long-lost record being found, former Nanaimo-based band The Glass Cage was reunited for the first time in over 50 years. Downtown Nanaimo's The Vault Cafe was standing room only on Sunday, February 22nd, as The Glass Cage celebrated the release of their long-lost record, Where Did the Sunshine Go? CHY earlier reported on the story behind the record when veteran music promoter Marcus Pollard found an unknown acetate record in a Portal Burning collectible store. To his surprise, the record still played, and the music on it was really good. After his discovery, Pollard spent several years researching the unknown psych rock group, The Glass Cage. Eventually, through his work, he connected with the then-teenagers who recorded the unreleased album in the summer of 1968. The record featured Nanaimo's Norm Roth, Wayne Horbord, Clayton Millen, and the late Terry Morrison and the late Doug Hastings. Poehler knew that he and his friend Jason Flower, a musician and archivist out of Victoria, needed to give this album its time in the spotlight. Now, almost 60 years later, the band is getting some rock star treatment as people come out to celebrate the band in the history of the past music scene that once rocked Nanaimo. To celebrate the album release, the band hosted three album release parties in Vancouver, Victoria, and Nanaimo. CGY attended the event in Nanaimo. The event featured talks from Poehler and Flower and a Q&A with the original band members. Where Did the Sunshine Go? Was also played in its entirety. As the final record release party came to an end, Poehler said he is happy to have celebrated the band in the city they formed in.
I didn't cry, so that's good. But, I mean, it's totally full circle. This is where it was born. This was where I feel that Jason and Supreme Echo and I, we did right by the band, we did right by the city, and yeah, I'm a very happy guy.
Flower said the event at the Vault Cafe was a perfect conclusion to bringing this record and band back to life.
We're here in Nanaimo. You know, the city had a population of 15,000 people at the time. I just can't believe this sound even came from here during then. But, having learned what bands were coming through, it does all make sense. I think most of all, honoring these musicians and also seeing their families here and knowing that there was no animosity amongst any of the members, given that they were teenagers when they broke up and everything. There's so much love, and the guys are so cool. I mean, I think we're equally just grateful, on all sides to have been able to do this together.
Flower, who created the archival record label Supreme Echo in Victoria, whose team worked on reissuing this record, says this project was special because of the original recording being found on an acetate, not vinyl, record.
I think what's so special is the source, to begin with, being an acetate. For world record collectors, this is the greatest find. I mean, there are unreleased albums and you find tapes and you hope they're not too deteriorated and you transfer them. But to find a one-of-a-kind acetate disc, okay, actually we found two in the end, from Little Nanaimo, on Vancouver Island, we have an album that is now redefining the history of Pacific Northwest psychedelia and garage rock. It's really going to mark its place, and I already see this in the international critical acclaim.
Having worked on many records over the years, Flower says he has never seen such an extraordinary response from people around the world for an archival album by an unknown band.
You have to imagine, this was all based on basically controlling the material not coming out and leaking one song. I usually would publish two teasers on a digital pre-order, but the opening track is such a banger. It was enough to just tantalize the people with.
Even before the whole album was digitally released on February 24th, he says the first pressing of the vinyl was already sold out. Flowers says he hopes this project shows people the importance of saving and documenting music.
I hope that anybody out there listening that has a brother or an uncle or a grandfather that has an acetate, this one-of-a-kind recorded record that has nothing written on it. We know of one in Duncan, if I could just get it out of the guy's hands, We'd love to preserve it for the broader public, so we can continue to document the history of underground on the island, because this album, The Glass Cage, is a soundtrack to your city.
Community members, friends, and family gathered to celebrate the band and reminisce on life 60 years ago. Christine Robertson was there to remember her late husband, Doug Hastings, the original drummer for The Glass Cage, who can be heard playing on the album. She says Doug would talk about his time with The Glass Cage a bit during their marriage of 15 years.
And I actually have known his family for 60 years because we moved to Nanaimo in 1965 and started at the church that his parents were very involved with. So, yeah, I've known the Hastings for forever.
She says it's great to see that everyone's so enthusiastic and interested in the band.
I'm absolutely thrilled that they managed to figure it all out and get it together. Yeah, I am thrilled.
She says Doug never forgot his time with the band and his love for music.
He loved his music. Sitting on the couch, he didn't have his drum kit when we were together. He'd sitting on the couch, tapping the arm of the couch to the music in his head. And the vibrations drove me nuts on occasion.
For C2N News, this is Laura McKenzie.
Jasmine Jack is Gitsan from Wilp Wiget and works alongside Don Mills on the Geoscience Gitsagukla program. In this interview, she explains her role in community engagement, supporting participants on the ground, connecting Hewlett members with training and industry opportunities, and helping bridge Indigenous knowledge and values with education and careers in the mining and geoscience sectors.
Hi, my name is Jasmine Jack. I'm from the Gitsan Territory.
We were just talking about what your part of Geoscience Gitsagukla is and your role in it. Let's start there. So tell me what your role in this program is.
I am the community engagement for Don. Don works down in Vancouver, and I'm here to be of assistance for the participants who are included.
Who are the participants?
They're roughly between the ages of 19 and 40. They are people who are looking to go into the mining industry and different aspects of the industry and looking to further education towards the mining industry.
Something that you mentioned earlier as well was finding recent graduates as well to maybe help them take that next step. Can you expand on that a bit?
So one of the things that we are working on is we are targeting the students who have just left college to give them just another avenue of the mining industry, another economic avenue. It's not a big market down in our area. A lot of it is labor, and we just want to give them resources, help them break down barriers, and bridging that gap from Indigenous to mining industry.
How does that break down as far as numbers of participants in a year and also what WILPs are also represented? Can you explain that?
Right now, this is, I would consider it as a pilot program. So Don has just introduced this into the Kitsagukla area. This is the first time I've seen it happen. What she is working towards is getting WILPs involved. And so each WILP was invited to bring on participants in the age range of like 19 to 30. And what they are doing is they want to strengthen WILPs in the industry. But the goal is to get 4 members from each WILP into 4-year degrees in any mining education industry. So geology, geoscience. And essentially that's where we're working on. So when I came in to work with Don, that was my understanding, was to strengthen each WILP into the market, but allowing them to understand what is happening at each level of the industry. Like I was saying, from prospecting to mining could be a 30-year aspect. And when we bridge that gap from the Indigenous communities, WILPs into the industry, what we're essentially doing is just giving them the vocabulary and the knowledge by bringing them into places like the AME, like the Rock Talk, giving them that vocabulary, the information needed to understand what it takes and to align their goals. Because a lot of Indigenous communities have goals, values, they have jobs in their territory where it is to protect the land, to secure the land. It is not ours, we just protect it. And so we are helping them introduce themselves into the industry so that they can be a part of the conversation along the way from prospecting to an actual mine. They will have the knowledge to make informed decisions to, one, protect their territory, to, two, to make sure that their WILP is taken care of. So whether they have jobs, education, security, all of those kind of values that we all need to do. And then, but like just to have a seat at the table, a lot of people have to find other jobs. They can't sit here and wait for these things to happen. And I decided to stay with Don because Don has been one of the rare people who come in, say they're going to do something, offer education towards it, and then fulfill that duty. And with me working beside her, I've been able to see firsthand that what is said is being done and it is happening. And we have been able to contact an immense amount of opportunities for the participants for jobs, job security, for job readiness, and like just invited to an abundance of places to introduce them to.
How long is this training or program, or is that module? Can people pick and choose what areas they want to study and get exposed to?
So right now, it's like the portion that she initialized with us was the videos on like core cutting, on core logging, geotechnical services, geology services, and then move that to job readiness and then job placement. Unfortunately, the videos are taking longer than expected to make. So what we have done is we have just grabbed the participants and brought them to Silver Queen Mine, to AME. She has access to an XRF lab, and so now we're introducing them into that part. Kisbeox has an education program out there, and so we've also introduced them into the first year of college courses in math, chemistry, and biology, and geology. And so introducing them into those areas. So they just have things to do while we're waiting for the videos. We are very fortunate because of the participants, because of the industry inviting us there. We've been able to see firsthand the logging, the core cutting, the drilling. So we've got to see firsthand without the videos.
Thank you so much for helping me understand this program even more in kind of the hands-on perspective of it.
Thank you.
UBC Professor Don Mills shared a presentation at Rock Talk 2026 about geoscience Gitxigugla. This two-year community-driven critical minerals program brings together indigenous knowledge and geoscience to study 8 priority minerals. In the first year, HULIP members share knowledge of their Lachyip while completing hands-on geology training and field visits to exploration sites and operating mines. In year two, participants apply both traditional knowledge and scientific methods through fieldwork and geochemical analysis, building the skills needed to engage with industry and to support informed land use decisions.
My name is Don Mills, and I'm currently an adjunct at the UBC Mining Engineering Department in APSCI, the Applied Science Faculty. And I have been working with the Gitxigugla community and their desire to look at the land or read the land in terms of its mineralogy. Being in the mining department might not look directly at the geology department, which is in the science faculty. However, mining engineers need both the resource as well as, when the resource is found, they need the structural geologist in order to enable the mining to progress in a manner which is related to the ore body.
Well, Don, thank you so much for taking the time to speak with me about this, and I'm very excited to see how much has been done in this past year as well since we spoke last year.
Thank you. It's always a pleasure seeing you.
That's it for this week's Scoop. Catch us next week, Thursdays at 12 p.m. in Smithers, Thursdays at 4 p.m. in Burnaby, Fridays at 8 a.m. in Nanaimo, and weekdays at 7:30 in Prince George. The Scoop was made possible by funding from the Canadian government and the Local Journalism Initiative, a Community Radio Fund of Canada initiative.